Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by the California 1020. Coming up on Sunday, February 15th, Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas and back. 10 miles, 20 bands, great post-race concert featuring Don Felder from the Eagles. Cal1020.com is the website. Try-palooza.com, our Endurance Awards Gala coming up on Saturday night, February 21st. Meb Kefleski, Dean Karnazes, Molly Huddle, Meredith Kessler, greatest names in running, triathlon, and cycling. Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear, and Function Smart Physical Therapy. Our next guest is writing a wonderful book right now. It's going to be very exciting, called Purple Dynasty, Records, Championships, and Traditions. From the South Eugene X-Men in Tracktown, USA, Bob Penny joins us. Bob, how are you?
Great. Hi.
Hey, thanks so much for taking time. Well, first of all, take us back. When did you get in the running?
Well, I started running as a kid growing up in Eugene. The all-comer meets stage at Hayward Field that Bill Bowerman used to put on. I think the first meet I went to there was when I was 5 years old, 1965.
And when you grew up in Eugene, and running is just it, right? It's a major sport.
Yeah, it is. Especially those all-comer meets, there were just hundreds of kids coming out for about 5 or 6 weekends during the summer, and there were a few opportunities to run. We even had a few grade school meets, some competitions, got into competitive track in starting in 7th grade in junior high. We had a 3-year junior high and a 3-year high school system going on all during those years.
So when you think of that area of the country, you think of Hayward Field and Bill Bowerman and Steve Prefontaine and Mary Decker, Alberto Salazar, Galen Rupp. What is it about that area of the country that just has led to, you know, the proliferation of great runners?
Well, you can't discount what Bowerman did for the sport there. And even before him, you had Bill Hayward, and he had championship teams at Oregon. So there was a rich tradition going back into the 40s, 50s, and then on into the 60s with Bowerman's NCAA championship teams. I suppose any time a collegiate team in a small town wins the NCAA championship on their own home field, that's going to spark some interest in the sport in a community. So that was the start of it. Then you had talent coming out of the woodwork.
Right.
Steve Prefontaine, of course, out on the coast. And then right there in Eugene, especially the McChesney brothers. Everything happening at every level. You had the university, but you also had great teams happening at the junior college level at Wayne Community College. They won, I think, a national cross-country championship at their level. And then you had South Eugene High School. We were only a mile away from the university, and during those years, it was the dominant force in Oregon High School track and field. The Axemen won 12 state championships in track and field over a course of 13 years.
And you ran for that group?
Yeah, I was class of 78, ran on a national high school record distance medley effort in 77, and was team captain in 78.
And so after high school, where'd you end up running?
I ran at Oregon initially as a walk-on, and then after a couple years, transferred to the University of Arizona, finished out my eligibility there, and there was a bit of a conduit from the Axemen down to Arizona. I went to Arizona partly because I wanted to stay in the Pac-10, but also mostly because I had teammates down there. So when I was at Arizona, there were 4 of us. Myself, Jeff Hess, who is now the current distant coach at South Eugene.
Right.
And Dirk Lakeman and Randy Reddit, a quarter miler. So there were four axemen on the Arizona team at that time, which I believe might have been the largest contingent of axemen on a NCAA Division I team at any one time, even more than Oregon ever had at one time.
I love axemen. I mean, what a cool, rather than being, you know, the Trevians or the whatever, the axemen. This has got an attitude to it, and the women could be axemen too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the women, you know, every once in a while in the press, they get called axe gals or something like that. But no, they have axemen on their uniform too. And yeah, there was definitely an attitude, you know. You got a burly little logger dude with a double-bitted axe. And, you know, I believe that in the late 60s, early 70s, the cheer at the basketball and football games was something like, "Give him the axe, give him the axe." Where? Right in the neck, right in the neck. And I think that got, like, nixed, you know?
Right.
Like, you weren't supposed to do it anymore.
Wasn't quite politically correct, I bet you. They didn't like that much anymore.
Yeah, but it was the attitude.
So, Jeff Hess, 79 grad and the current coach. But there was a period there. He's the current coach, but... was there a period where the Axemen had fallen off a bit before Jeff came back?
Yeah, there was. They always had good athletes coming in individually, you know, but team-wise, they fell off. And it's hard to say how that happened. In some ways, in writing the history of the program, I found that the condition of the facilities throughout time paralleled the trend of the team, and anybody in scholastic sports and working for school districts around the country probably understands that, you know, if you don't have what athletes need, they're not going to excel.
Right.
And so the fortunes of the track, which was resurfaced first in 1973 to become the all-weather. When I started in seventh grade, my junior high ran on the same track. We were right across the street, so it was cinders.
Right.
And
sure.
the summer of 73, the axemen got out there with their own shovels and started digging it up and being part of a community wide effort of fundraising to create a track. And the school district wasn't behind it in terms of maintaining the facility. It fell off, and actually the track ended up getting condemned. Part of it fell off. It is built near the old swampy Amazon Creek, and they ended up having to train elsewhere for a number of years, 5 years or so, in the late 80s, early 90s. So that kind of thing is going to affect the program. Kids aren't going to want to come out. They're going to want to get into other sports that were becoming really, really popular, especially soccer. And but they had good athletes. And the amazing thing about the Axemen program is that all along, the program has been coached by a series of athletes who were all athletes of my coach, of our coach back in the 70s. So the continuity of tradition at that school is unprecedented. Compared to the lineage or trajectory of coaching at most any other school you can look at.
So what led to you wanting to write the book? Obviously, you ran there and feel closer to tradition. And obviously, you know, the athletes that you've had over time and the success and the name Axemen,
yeah,
all that contributes. But what was it? Was it a personal thing, feeling like, you know what, this story really needs to be told?
Yeah. There were two or three things coming together. There was initially a reunion back in 2004 when our coach, Harry Johnson, retired after a long career at Nike that really brought together a lot of the guys and got me thinking. But it really wasn't until 2011 when Jeff Hess got the boys and girls cross-country teams to win the state championship side by side that really sparked an interest that, wow, the program is back. And, you know, but the underlying personal feeling, too, is that there were a number of guys who I ran with back in the day, Bill McChesney being probably the most notable.
Yeah.
But also a number of other teammates. And there were, including Bill, four from his class, which was the year before me, and then also Bill's brother Tom, who was also state champion, who all died young, and a lot of those passed away in the middle of the 90s.
Wow, those are young guys. Those are young guys.
Yeah, they were young guys. Yeah, one thing or another happened. You know, both Bill died in a car wreck. Heading to the coast to be an honorary starter for a race. His brother Tom died, got hit by on his bicycle, rushing to help be at an awards ceremony. Yeah. He was giving, and other guys passed away from you know, early illnesses,
sure.
Things like that, and. Two of them had been my college roommates, and all of them were close teammates, and I was pretty closely affected. So I wanted to honor them, their legacy, and then these young athletes who are there now, who are really being inspired by their own success and are re-identifying with the tradition that the school has had from way back in the day. The remarkable thing, I was sitting with Jeff Hess and we were talking about this, and we were saying, you know, the athletes you're coaching nowadays are really inspired by stuff that happened back in 1975, 76, 77. Can you imagine us back then thinking about, boy, something that happened back in 1938 really is got me cranked up? You know?
No.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing. And yet that is what's happening with these athletes today. So I wanted to thread the needle. I wanted to tie together the past and the current story. And everybody I've talked to about the book, all the people in Eugene and all the connections from the past and the people in the Eugene running community, universally people say, oh, that is a story that really needs to be told.
Well, you think about it, you're with Harry, with Harry Johnson. Besides what he did with you guys, when he ran Athletics West, which,
yeah.
If you think
yeah.
about it, Athletics West was the predecessor of the Mammoth Track Club and what's happened down in Tucson. And really, we had success when athletes trained together through Athletics West. And after
absolutely.
That, we didn't. We had, you know, basically throughout the 90s, we really didn't have any running success until... You know, they created the Mammoth Track Club with Bob Larson and Joe Vigil up at Mammoth with Meb and Ryan and mm-hmm. Josh Cox. All of a sudden, people are training together and pushing each other to be better.
Yeah, actual post-collegiate training clubs. That was Athletics West was the first deal like that. Harry had to basically, you know, invent the mold.
Yeah.
On that, there were problems. It only worked for a few years for him personally, but it launched. What is really the modern way of dealing with post-collegiate athletics in this country. That at that point in time, you have to look back with some hindsight. At that point in time, they really didn't know where it was all going to go or what the, you know, even how the sport was going to change. But they were in a odd in-between time where that original idea about a pro circuit had faltered, and yet actual professional track hadn't really started. So they were really pioneering.
Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah.
So how it's interesting. I had Coach Larson on last year sometime, and we were talking uh-huh. about the change in coaching and how much running has changed. And when we were talking about coaching Meb Keflezighi and Dina Castor, he was like, well, with Meb, The program I used with Meb was really Kirk Pfeffer's program. And, you know, basically Meb was more of a low mileage, high quality person, where Dina was more of a, you know, high mileage type of person. I'm like, wait a second. You're basically, you used a program from the 80s and Kirk Pfeffer for Meb Keflezighi in the current age. He goes, how much do you think training has changed? Do you go along with that really in this day and age, heart monitors, and there's so much else out there, and there are Garmins, and is it still, I mean, could you take a program that you work with the kids back 20 years ago and still have it be successful?
Well, you know, there are a lot of new bells and whistles with training, that's for sure, especially, you know, in terms of how to deal with an athlete when they've been injured and they're trying to work and keep their training going, or how to deal with things that crop up related to iron or deficiencies monitoring. But the basics are always still there. And there's going to be philosophical differences, and there always have been, I think, about the broad sort of philosophy of a training program. But I feel like when I was training at South, what Harry Johnson had going on, which was a sort of moderate mileage, high quality program in terms of the balance of the training, was an ideal program, and it certainly worked for a great majority of athletes who were there. You know, I think that a lot of times, in my opinion, what gets emphasized in terms of training is some sort of magic pill related to a formula of
right.
mileage or versus a number of other components in a balance. But when I look at a history of success, what I actually see is I see that you have to have a training culture where you're training with other people and there's a culture of success that is emphasized. And that goes beyond this sort of formulaic attitude about what's the right training system.
So what, for your high school, for the X-Men, who was your best, who was the biggest competitor in terms of, was there another high school, another major rival that you guys wanted every year?
There were always some good schools out there. You know, winning a huge string of state titles was never a simple thing. You know, there were very few years or situations where you could say, well, that was kind of a gimme. There was always a challenge. There was always somebody. It wasn't always the same school. But back in that day, you had Sunset in Portland. It was mostly the Portland school.
The big schools,
Larger schools. You know, nowadays, Oregon high school track is divided into six divisions. In our day, it was three divisions. So you had a larger range of school population sizes put into each division. And South Eugene was maybe about 1,200 students, and we were competing against Portland schools with 3,000 or 4,000 students.
Yeah.
So, and we were still pretty much, running the pants off.
Dominant.
So, we weren't getting anybody, different than the normal high school kid, coming out for our teams. I would say, at least in terms of Harry, he was not somebody who was overly a recruiter, who was really actively approaching kids who he thought might have talent and trying to steal them from other sports. He was more creating a culture where kids in the school would see, hey, I want to go be with those guys. They're having fun with what they're doing, and they're really they're obviously really successful. And once they got in with the group, you know, the average, all boats would rise. You know, he would take whatever talent was there in a guy and bring it forward. In terms of the competition, I think that's what the difference was. was that in other schools, you know, their systems might have only catered to the better runners and not to the broad talent, and so they didn't have the depth. The thing that happened at South Eugene was that we had great runners. We had amazing depth. In those mid-70s years, we regularly had about 25 guys under 5 minutes in the mile, and something similar under 10 minutes in the 2 mile. So that was the kind of broad base that really created the success of the program and the consistency.
Was there one guy that you raced with over the years who, you know, on training days was okay, but on race day was just nails, just totally different guy in training and racing?
Yeah, occasionally there'd be some guy like that. I wouldn't say that that would be the characteristic, a product of the South Eugene program, though. Generally, the South Eugene program seemed to help guys, you know, their ability was known to them and to others through the training. I definitely experienced that sort of thing. Probably the largest degree was in the 1975-76 season.
Yeah.
Mark Feig, who graduated from South Eugene in 72, had gone through Oregon and came back to train with Terry for preparation for the 76 Olympics, to make a shot for 76 Olympics. And along with him, he drew in a whole bunch of cohorts who came over and trained with us. And that was really the initial impetus of what a couple years later became Nike said, hey, Harry is working with these guys. Let's just create Athletics West.
Gotcha.
But we had Feig and Paul Geis and Scott Daggett and a host of other runners training with us that season. And I'll tell you, Scott Daggett was the guy who, the opposite of what you're saying, would kill it so amazingly in workouts that you just wouldn't believe it. And that was the year, this was Bill McChesney's junior year, and I witnessed a number of control runs where we were doing those guys would be doing 12 at sub 5.
Huh.
High school junior.
Oh, my God.
And Daggett. Those guys would be out killing it on those kinds of things. I talked to Geis a couple of years ago, and we were talking about that. And this was the year that Harry coached Geis to be the only American who made a distance final in Montreal that year. Geis's comment on the training that was happening mid-year there was like, I wasn't keeping up with those guys.
Wow. So at this point, are you in the midst of the Kickstarter program?
You know, we are getting near the finish line, which is amazing.
Awesome.
And I'll tell you, here's the deal. This is a new outfit in publishing. There's a lot of innovation happening in publishing these days, which, frankly, I wasn't as aware of until I really started pursuing this project. But this is a startup company. They're about a year old, called Inkshares. And it's kind of a hybrid idea about how to get a book published. They've got professionals who are right out of the heart of the publishing establishment, editors and designers and whatnot, but they're putting that model together with a Kickstarter-type crowdfunding model.
Interesting.
And so you put together a project, but it's not just anybody gets to post a project. It's got to be accepted by the publisher, like you would if you were pitching a book to a publisher.
Sure.
Then they put it on their website, put it together as a project on a website, and run a Kickstarter-type campaign. And you get, it's an all-or-nothing type of crowdfunding deal where you have to make a goal to go forward, or if it doesn't go forward. And that goal covers their hard cost of editing, designing, and printing. One thing that's cool for authors about that is you get a lot better return on the book sales than a conventional legacy publisher does.
Right.
And they're flexible too. You know, with the book, with the project design and whatnot. So as we've approached the deadline, we've literally looked back at what we've thought about the project, number of pages, number of photos, that kind of thing, tweaked it to get it closer to achievable, you know, really ramped up and rallied up the funding, and we're within $2,000 of the goal, which the goal at this point is $15,500, and so we're getting really close.
Wow. So if people want to help make this a reality, where can they go?
It's pretty easy. Go to inkshares.com, search through the project, scroll down and find the Purple Dynasty project, click on that, and it'll take you to the project page. On the project page, there's a nice 5-minute video, a lot of historic photos from back in the day, describes the book. There's a sample chapter. There's a paragraph or two describing the project. And then there's places to donate. There's some preset donation buttons. There's you can click on order in bulk. Basically, what you're doing is you're pre-ordering the book.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And kicking in extra money as you do it because you're a supporter of the whole thing.
Love that.
Yeah. So the funding deadline is February 4th.
Oh, so you got a little time, and you're only a couple grand away.
Yeah. No, it's going to make it.
I love that. Love that. Now, Bob, are you still running yourself?
Somewhat here and there. You know, I'm a carpenter, and I think you know that carpenters abuse their bodies.
Yes,
so
they do.
I got the back thing. I got some ankle things from back in the day from running.
Yep.
I am a long distance backpacker though.
Oh.
Every summer I go at least on a 100-mile trip or so, and I guide backcountry trips. So, you know, definitely still active, trying to work back into the running, but the impact of the sport is a little hard on some weak points of the body at this point. Yeah.
So has there been, when you started interviewing people and getting stories from folks, was there a teammate that whose story sort of came out of nowhere that you're like, I had no idea?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's really amazing. You know, that everybody had a really strong feeling about the program and the history of the program, what it was that they came into and how they left it. But I don't think anybody had a real feeling for the large arc over a period of a decade or two of how the whole program evolved. And there were many times when I would turn up a story that guys from a few years before were very familiar with that I didn't know that, you know. And probably the most amazing story was in 1970, the coach at the time died of a heart attack the night between the state prelims and the state finals.
Wow.
Yeah, and the team had to rally. The following day, they ended up getting second. I don't think they were expected to win or anything, but practically every guy on the, competing that day PR'd.
Running for the coach.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, they go to InkShares. Is it inkshares.com?
Inkshares.com. Yeah,
love that.
Look for Purple Dynasty.
Purple Dynasty, and let's get the last $2,000 so that we can have Bob tell the story. Now, how far along? I mean, I'm sure you're already pretty deep into the book.
Oh, yeah. I've been writing. Yeah, it's probably about 20 to 25% written approaching 60, 70 hours of interview time. And gathering up materials and resources from the past, all this data, boxes and boxes of files, historic photos going through, pretty much have amassed the best collection and the best network of resources and networking with people to tell this story that could possibly be put together at this point. So just waiting for the green light and get the editorial support behind me to launch it forward more.
Now, when do you think, if the dollars come through, which they will, is this something that will come out in 2015?
Well, the original notion was to have this thing in people's hands in Eugene at the 2016 Olympic trials. That would be cool.
That would be great.
Yeah, that would be cool. And that was the original goal, and maybe that will still be it. I'll talk to the publishers. I'm very sure that we're going to make this goal, and I think that they would like that too, because that, with books, it's all about marketing and
all about buzz,
having the right timing and opportunity, and that's a good one.
Well, and you'll have all your legendary. You'll have Galen Rupp up there. I mean, all the legendary Oregon runners will be up there, which will be perfect.
But as soon as this project goes live, when the goal is met, people can go to Inkshares and pre-order the book.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, they can pre-order the book, and at some time shortly after that, Inkshares will put it on, like Amazon, and it can be pre-ordered there.
Now, did you run with Huddle at Arizona?
Yeah.
And he was he as bad as we thought he was?
Yeah, I was better than Paul.
Who wasn't? That is funny.
Super props to Paul and other guys like him, but, he's out there doing it. And staying with it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
He actually still runs every once in a while.
Yeah, that's right.
I love it. Hey, Bob, thanks so much for taking so much time. I'm excited for you. Again, inkshares.com. Just look for Purple Dynasty and help support what's going to be a great, great book. Very, very excited to read about this. Actually, a friend of mine named Rob Lusitania has been doing a movie on Coach Bob Larson.
Oh, great.
And probably the same issue you deal with is finding photos, finding video.
Oh, yeah.
That's so hard because it really wasn't much back then.
Yeah. And, it's tough, And a lot of these things are photos in newspaper archives.
Yes.
The newspaper has
out of business
resources to help you,
know.
And so and finding stuff that's really quality.
Yes.
Reproducible, it's tough. Yeah.
It is really tough. You're talking about black and white photos on newsprint from 30 years ago.
Exactly.
Trying to take a photo of that. Yeah, that'll look really good.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, thanks again for your time. Bob Penny has been our guest. We are brought to you by California 1020, coming up on Sunday, February 15th. Del Mar Fairgrounds sends it and back, 10 miles, 20 bands, a great post-race concert featuring Don Felder from the Eagles, who I think is a runner. Cal1020.com. Tripalooza coming up on Saturday night, February 21st. Meb Keflezighi, Dean Karnazes, Molly Huddle, some of the greatest runners and triathletes. That's tri-palooza.com. You can get tickets there. Core Sports, the very best in women's athletic wear, and Function Smart Physical Therapy. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.